Rolene Marks, how are you?
Good morning, Howard, and awesome, epic morning, Mayhem team and listeners.
Well, there you go. You can't get more enthusiastic than that. All right.
I'm still loving your singing from yesterday. It gave me life.
Yeah. Look, poor Whitney, you know, she was turning in her grave, but, all right. Yeah. We tried. We really did try, and we did sing with enthusiasm, even if we didn't sing so well.
We did.
But there were lights, you know, there was a whole stage presence. She may be spinning, but I was loving.
All right, Rolene Marks. All right. Can we please talk about, and is this a serious story? Cancer sniffing dogs in Israel.
It is a very serious story, and it's so serious that it's made several news outlets today. But an extraordinary breakthrough in cancer research in Israel, and somewhere in southern Israel, they don't tell you where, of course, but there is a laboratory that is teaching dogs to sniff out early signs of cancer. So we don't know whether the lab is. And by lab, I don't mean the lab breed of dog. I mean the laboratory, although they could use labs. I mean, who knows? It's called Dog Prognose.
That's funny,
and
yeah.
What this does, it allows a person to send a saliva sample in a small plastic container and receive an immediate answer as to whether or not they have cancer. And the cost of the test is about 399 shekels or a little over $100. I'm not even going to attempt the cost in rand.
Yeah, because it depends on – it keeps changing. It's one thing.
Does
it's changing again. Yeah, exactly.
But what this test does is that the dogs can identify the characteristic signs of cancer by smelling the saliva samples. And the dog trainer, his name is Uri Bakeman, he says that if the dog sits down immediately after sniffing the sample, it means it is suspicious. So in a recent study which was conducted at the University of Ben Gurion by Professor Pesach Schwartzman, they determined that various types of cancer share an odor that dogs are capable of identifying. I tell you, this is why they are our best friends, and animals sometimes are just far, in fact, I think all the time, are just far more intelligent than human beings are.
It's absolutely unbelievable. Look, I do know that they're using dogs very successfully in the diabetic area, especially for kids, where they warn parents and they, you know, as to with regard to sugar levels. I do know that they're using dogs to anticipate an epileptic seizure for people who suffer from epilepsy. So it's I guess it really does make sense that that this is the next area. But what a powerful, what an incredible gift to the world this kind of thing is.
Quite extraordinary, and they say that the most famous case involved Daisy, a doggy who managed to correctly identify 500 different cases of cancer after smelling about 6,500 samples. I mean, that is just she was just extraordinary. She really was a pioneer in sniffing out these type of cells in breath and in urine samples, and she came to the knowledge of these researchers after she detected her own owner's breast cancer in its early stages and was able to save her life.
Phenomenal.
In fact, she was so good, she was awarded the Blue Cross Medal for saving hundreds of lives.
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. Talking about saving lives, tell us about slaughter-free steak. What is that?
Well, I also thought that this was a joke story, but it turns out it isn't. And, you know, it begs so many questions. Will vegans eat it because it's steak that's grown from a cell of a cow? You know, if it is vegan, is it milkic? Is it pariv? Is it fleishig? You know, it's going to spark all kinds of controversy. But the world's first lab-grown steak has been grown in Israel. So, you know, Howard, we all love the smell of a good steak, don't we all?
We do indeed. But look, does it seem real? Does it seem and feel and look like and taste like a steak?
Well, apparently it does. It doesn't have the thickness of a steak. I mean, apparently they're still working on it, but it does smell like a steak. It does taste like a steak. It does look like a steak. So basically, Aleph Farms, which are a food tech incubator, which is part of the bigger Strauss group, they have worked in collaboration with the Technion in Israel's Institute of Technology. And what they have done is they have successfully produced the first lab-grown steak. Now, why this could be so good is that, you know, the slaughter of animals is really contributing to hurting our environment. You know, it's creating a bigger carbon footprint. It's creating an environment where it's impacting on global warming, et cetera, et cetera. But Aleph Farms says that they have really, really created the benchmark in what they call cellular meat production. And they say that they could literally shape the future of food by producing cell-grown meat that resembles free-range meat. They've grown it, they've taste tested it, which of course is the most important thing. But apparently it's not ready yet for commercially. It's not ready to be saved or put on the nearest menu. And also, you know, it begs the question, how much are you going to have to pay for a lab-grown steak? And at the moment, it's not at a place where it's commercially viable because it's, you know, there's no volume yet. But quite extraordinary. I mean, it's making vegans who miss a good steak and won't admit it really, really happy.
Absolutely unbelievable. Apparently, Kathy Kaler interviewed the R&D director from Aleph Farms a few weeks ago. I'm going to ask her if she can actually post that podcast back on the website, because very, very, it's really, really interesting indeed. All right, taking a look at some of your messages. It's going back to the dog story. So a dog scan is not a CAT scan. That's from Stan.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, somebody please
absolutely
come up with a dog versus CAT scan.
Unsigned says the steak lost its marbles, so have you. All right, well, there we go. That wouldn't be the first time that I've had that accusation. And then Alon Berman says, Howard, therefore you had better hold on to your Yorkie after all. Have a great Shabbos. Now, so Rolene, you won't know that story, but it so happened that we were talking about dogs a little bit earlier this morning, because there's been a small dog warning, weather warning in Ohio, where because of winds of 50 miles per hour, people are being urged to look after their small dogs because they could literally, quite literally, blow away.
Shame.
Yeah, I know. So I was wishing if it came here, you know, Fred, my Yorkshire Terrier is not my favorite, and I would, whoops, I was holding him and he blew away. What can I do? Fly, Freddy, fly. All right. And then one of our unsigned listeners said that they actually did lose a dog to an errant, hailstone back in 1977, a Yorkshire Terrier. But I mean, 1977, really, and I think we have to move on, right?
Oi, I'm scared to even comment there. I do have this vision, and I know it's very not PC, and I'm the biggest animal lover. I just have these visions of dogs on leashes that are now balloons.
Balloons.
That is actually the most beautiful. Freddie would actually make a beautiful balloon.
You guys are so rude.
No, but the truth is that, you know what? I do love, a few people have said, do I not like dogs? I absolutely adore my dogs. Just not Freddie. I don't think Fred's a nice person, actually. But Gatsby and Daisy, I really, really do adore. So you know what? It's not that I don't like dogs. I just don't like, and Fred's nasty. You know
really?
What I mean? A person walks through the door and Fred immediately, I think she's a bull terrier.
It's a he. I was going to ask if maybe Fred doesn't like you dressing him as Batman every Halloween.
Just it's not like Halloween, it's Purim.
Oh, yes,
it's
yeah.
It's Purim, and yeah. Fred wants to go as Batman. It's not my fault. It's what he goes at every year.
And like, you're just contributing more and more to these visions. Now I have these visions of small dogs dressed as bats flying around.
No, so Fred goes as Batman every year. That's what he wants. And Daisy goes as Batgirl. But you know what? They do like it, and there's nothing I can really do about that. All right, we don't have a lot of time, unfortunately.
Ever try to dress a cat in a bat suit?
Oi, no. Not lately. How does that work? Not so well, huh?
Not well at all.
Right.
Getting the serious hairy eyeball from Jack.
Right, exactly. All right, finally, I want to talk about gag orders, because last week when this terrible terror attack took place in Jerusalem, there was a lot of talk about please don't publish the information. There is a gag order. What are the circumstances that would have them implement a gag order on a story?
Okay, so this case, as horrible and tragic as it is, has brought the discussion about gag orders very much into the discussion or the global consciousness for several reasons. First of all, last week when the story of this horrible, horrible murder broke, the police immediately put all investigations under gag order. And the reason for this is threefold. The first is that for the family to hear details that may or may not be true, but are particularly gruesome, is extremely, extremely traumatic. And we actually heard from Ari Fuld's brother, Hillel Fuld, saying, mm-hmm. As a family who've experienced this, you have no idea about the untold trauma it has on us. We're already grieving. Please don't do this. And if you're going to do this, defriend me immediately. The second reason is that when these crimes happen, there's a lot of very, very delicate forensics and information that our police, and in this case our security forces as well, because we have to determine whether or not it's criminal or a terror attack. A lot of these details have to be gathered. And by the public speculating and leaking these things onto social media, it doesn't help us track down the perpetrator or make the case. In fact, it could severely damage it. And third of all, guys, I beg of you, I'm literally on my knees. You can't see it, but I am. Unless things come or facts come from reputable news sources, don't share them. Mm-hmm. It creates such havoc, and it actually creates a lot of trauma and a lot of damage. And I know that there were a lot of people going out onto social media and saying, this happened, that happened, and we have to tell the story because the media won't. First of all, the Israeli media covered the story as its top story. Second of all, reputable media are not going to report fake news. So if it doesn't come from the police or the army or from a reputable news source, please, please don't share it on social media. It creates a lot of havoc.
Absolutely right. And Rolien Marks, that's where we leave it. You have a fantastic weekend. A Shabbat Shalom. Just relax, chill, and we will chat to you next week.
God bless, and I'm going to go protect all small dogs.
Yeah, please. I mean, you're not in Ohio, but it might not be Kansas, but you never know. Time is 8 o'clock.